Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Bennett Baquet Show here on KVPI Radio, your good times oldie station. And again, we have Mr. Ello Fuseli with us for the second part of our program. And we start now. Mr. Ello, if you don't mind, continue with these stories you've been telling us about.
I'll never forget Oscar paid his credit card. Can you imagine all the gas that I spent? And Percy, the same thing, and Chester Lorman. When a man would make a commitment in those days in politics and say, "Hello, you got my vote," 9 out of 10, or was it even better than that, that you could count on his word? Yes, that was one thing, but you can tell when your vote is a little shaky, when he gives you a soft handshake and says, I'll look down at his shoes and says, "I'll do what I can." I learned you could go almost scratch him down off. But you could tell when one of them was enthusiastic, give me a little, maybe a $5 or $10. Uh-huh. And that was very important, because if he did that, that meant that he was really interested in running. He right. wouldn't do that unless...
If he pulled out money to help you, that meant he was rich.
That was good. And a lot of them, you don't imagine, the little gifts are going house to house, all over this parish. Uh-huh. They were plowing in the field, I'd run and go meet my dad in the plow. The ducks would fly. It was hot that summer. That summer of 1954 was the hottest day, and that's when I was campaigning. The election was in July, uh-huh. July of 1954.
Oh. But I bet there's good memories, and I bet you the fact that you met so many people was good.
That's what, of course it was good. I practically saw every one of these parishes. Uh-huh. And don't forget, those speeches, not to brag, but I was a pretty good speaker in English and in French. Make a good talk. Short, I always liked it like a bikini. Uh-huh. Short enough to be interesting, but long enough to cover the subject.
How true that is.
Anyway.
Okay, then you served. You probably assumed office at, was it the first of the year?
First 12 years, I had no opposition.
No opposition.
Let's go into that a little bit.
Okay.
I served 3 terms as district attorney. The first 12 years was a fun. Uh-huh. It was fun to be district attorney. In that third term, that's when all that problem about the schools came about.
Okay.
And I was caught in that integration, desegregation problem of the parish. And a lot of that stuff was targeted towards me as being in favor of that kind of business and instrumental, which I had absolutely nothing to do. In fact, I would fight them like all I could, but I always said the feds had the atomic bomb.
You know, that is a saying that everyone that knows you has said. Mr. Ello has always said, the federal government has the atomic bomb. And that said it all.
And they were calling the shots. Uh-huh. Make us get up at all hours of the time to go out there and have meetings with Judge Putnam. And it's a funny thing. Years after, I met Judge Putnam at a physician's office in Africa. He said, "Ello, I want to confess to you and ask you to forgive me, because I was a little over hard on Evangeline Parish and your." I says, "It's all over with now." I says, "I lost the Senate race on account of that." And I says, "Well, I ran a credible, I carried the parish pretty handily, Evangeline, but by the time it hit a Walls Parish, they beat me."
Right.
So, I know how to take it, and I know how to win. Like Adlai Stevenson said when he got beat by Eisenhower, he said, "How do you feel about that?" He says, "It reminds me of a little boy that stuffed his toe in the dog." He says, "I'm too big to cry, and it hurts too much to laugh."
That's a good, I don't remember that, but that is a great one.
Adlai Stevenson was, he ran against an impossible to beat Eisenhower. Yes. He was too popular, but you talk about him.
He was a brilliant man.
He'd have been a great president, Adlai Stevenson. He just ran at the wrong time. He was the one in charge of the, he was an ambassador to the UN in that Russian crisis in Cuba.
Missile crisis, yes.
He's the one that said that he had the evidence that the Russians were putting atomic missiles in Cuba to attack the United States. And that's when Kennedy put a boycott around Cuba and was going to stop those ships, which was an act of war. No telling what would have happened, but the Russians backed out, thank God, that they stopped and turned around and took off their missiles from Cuba. But on the north, that was a little side deal too, because Kennedy took out all of his missiles around Turkey that were aimed directly at Russia.
Yes.
So they kind of sealed off that deal.
Well, you almost had to wheel and deal that. A lot of people don't understand in politics, you can't always have your way. You just can't.
Kennedy did a great job, Paul. It's a pity we lost him.
Yes.
By an assassin's bullet. Oswald. Anyway, coming back to that, I after Iran to the Senate got beat, I supported Edwards like mad, putting up money, working like heck for him. And he appointed me to the Louisiana Tax Board of Tax Appeals, which is a semi-judicial board. There were three members, myself and Mrs. Camille Gravel and Judge Gray, the federal judge. We were members of the tax commission. So I served until Kennan got elected. And he fired us. I tendered my resignation. And he appointed Jerome Bullock to take my place.
Okay.
Jerome was a big Kennan man. Mm-hmm. So he put him.
But that was the normal in those days. That was the normal.
That was normal.
Yeah.
The winner.
Goes, yeah.
That was get out. And I resigned.
Uh-huh.
And then they opened up a second judgeship thing.
Right.
I decided at that time I was going to run for that. I said, well, I'm going to cap my career one way or the other, finish it off or become a judge. And so I ran for the judgeship, and thank God I was elected with a good majority over a good boy, a good man, who's presently a judge now, Judge Larry.
Yeah.
And he's going to make a good judge. Thank God for that.
Mr. Ello, you've always been known, and I should call you Judge. By golly, I'll keep calling you Mr. Ello. I'm going to call you Judge. You've always been known as a very compassionate man.
Maybe too much.
Well, no, but you were raised in the Depression.
In addition,
you went through hard times.
I felt that I was a professional. That, like Judge Larry V. Dream, he ran against me, but I supported him like heck.
Right.
Yeah. I had helped elect him to the House of Representatives. Worked like hell for Larry, and then he was ambitious too, and I wanted to cap my career, so we ran it all, and I was lucky to win. And but as you say, politics, once it's gone, it's gone with me.
Yeah.
And I don't gloat over victory, and I don't. She won in that Senate race. I knew I was beat here,
mm-hmm.
But the fighting spirit would not let me withdraw in that second primary.
But you still won your parish.
Huh?
You still won your parish.
Oh yeah, pretty handily.
Right.
And I carried Allen Parish by 500 votes, close. But the big Avoyelles, they loaded up on me. That man was from Avoyelles, and they hadn't had a senator for a long time, so they balled up and gave me the works, which
right.
is good. That's the way it's supposed to be. And Tarsa and I, we got good friends, and I don't hold anything against him whatsoever. fact, when he ran for Public Service Commission, after that, if you recall,
yes, I did.
I supported him, and him and Wendell and I worked right here for John. So much for the political angle of it. Oh, that's one thing. When I was working for the state as the board of the tax bill, Edwards called me up, Governor Edwards. He says, "I want you to run to be a delegate to the Democratic Convention in New York." Oh, I says, Governor, I says, I don't have time. I gotta work at home, and I'm working for you over here on the board of that. He says, I'd appreciate it. How can you turn down when a man has helped you out? And he says, you're gonna run. I said, yeah. I said, now look, when I'm gonna run now, I'm gonna run to win you. I said, I'm not gonna just
put your name in the hat. No,
get out there and go. He said, well, that's what I want you to do. That's why I chose you to run with Butch Didier, the sheriff of Aurora, Jim Brady, same Jim Brady that's on the federal judgeship in Baton Rouge, and Jack Burson from Eunice, and a black guy from down the river in that district. So, man, sure enough, I put the whole organization back in track. We ran away with the thing. Bennett Johnson was backing up Jimmy Carter, and Governor Edwards didn't have any confidence in Jimmy Carter, and rightly so, didn't have any confidence in President Carter. He wanted to be free to maybe find a dark horse. So we run, and we won. But Johnson got a pretty sizable vote from Jimmy Carter and the number of delegates. So Edwards says, I'm not going to let Bennett Johnson get to be the spokesman for the Louisiana delegation. So he makes a deal with the Berettas, who is the Wallace vote, to combine to vote together on the organization of the state delegation. And listen, I was very friendly with the old man, and even though we had different views about things.
That was Leander Perez, wasn't it?
Leander, the old man.
Yeah.
He called me Cotter. He smoked a big cigar and take me out on his yacht, the Manta. We go for 4 or 5 days out into the Gulf of Mexico on the Manta with service. Whatever you wanted to drink, whatever you wanted to eat, you had it. Those black people on that boat would come out there with white gloves.
The royal treatment.
Oh, Lord. They would bow to old Leander. Anyway, then his two boys, I went to school with Lee Perez. He was older than Chalon Perez, but Chalon was the chairman of the delegation for the Wallace people. And they signed up with Governor Edwards to be this. Edwards was going to be the spokesman for the organization. That Chalon Perez would throw some parties. He'd import the seafood and everything from Blackman Parish all the way to New York. Took us out to the Four Seasons restaurant. You talk about a deal that the finest restaurants, I guess, in the world. He underwrote the whole thing.
I know you weren't taken aback because you had the hobnob with all the people in high places, but your normal everyday life, you're not that kind of man.
I could come back to take a creek and go out there and
spend
3 or 4 days and spend with those the Turkey Creekians and hunt and fish. Coming back to that, there was nobody was more of a sportsman than I was. I hunted in almost every parish of this state. Up in northeast Louisiana, in Tensaw Parish, up in Deer, fishing in Lake Bruin, and all the way to on the Shreveport side, the Sabine River, hunting deer and wood duck. In the Falls Parish, I hunted every from Spring Bayou to Old River, Lake Pearl, the Atchafalaya River in Simsport and Melville, the Mississippi River up there at the lock. Down below, I went to Grand Isle fishing, Cameron Parish fishing, and hunting doves in the first season and when they were migrating from North Louisiana to the southeast corner of Cameron Parish. In that time, we went, in the migration, we went to Johnson Bay at the Holly Beach, killed all the doves we wanted, and within the law. And Rigsby and I would go with Oscar.
Mr. Rigsby was always a good, fast friend of yours, was he not?
Mr. Rigsby was one of my brothers. He was one more than that. We were from about 7 or 8 years old. He came and Daddy sold him a lot on the South Street. From then on, we were friends until the poor man died. Closer and close.
All those years.
Closer and close.
Yes.
Just like a brother.
Okay, everyone, we'll be back in just one quick moment.
Costello, I have to ask you about the governors, because you've known most of the governors in the state of Louisiana in the last 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to tell me Edwards, but I'm going to ask you, what was the most interesting governor you ever dealt with?
Well, Edwards was, of course, you're right about Edwards, because he was elected 4 times, and he was a tremendous boon for Evangeline Parish. He had a tender feeling for all parish,
right.
And he helped us out a lot with the roads, with the Chico Park, and so forth. But you can't discount Earl K. Long, too. He'd always come over with his campaigns right on that Courthouse Square.
He made Bill Black famous.
Yeah. Then he'd come over here, and we might have drink a beer or something together. And he was something else. I'd go meet him. Uncle Lee and I, Uncle Lee was his strong ally in the legislature. We'd go meet him up there at his farm, the Peanut Farm, in Winfield.
Winfield, okay.
Every time we'd go, he'd give me a can of that old black Stein's molasses, a can of that, and a slab of that bacon, homemade bacon, that he was a hog hunter. He had his Gatahoula dog, and he'd hunt the wild hog in the woods of Winfield. And when he was elected and I was going to run for district attorney, I met him at the hunt room in the Capitol House with Uncle Lee. He said, "You sure you can beat that man?" He was angry with Mr. Herman, because he left the Long faction and supported Jimmy Noble in 1940. Earl was running for lieutenant governor in that thing and got beat in Sam Jones. But he was laying the foundation in 1956 to run for governor. 1956 to run. So he said, "You sure you can beat it?" I said, "I'll work like heck, and if you can help me, I'd appreciate it very much too." He said, "Here," took $100 bill. My first contribution, gave me $100 bill to start my campaign off.
And in those days, that was equivalent to easily $1,000 today.
Yeah, and it was more to have his support.
Yes.
Because listen, old John Clark from below Mamou, right at that bayou, and old Horny Clark, and some people from Parker, he'd go to house and talk and make a board for me.
I remember it was a distant relative, Numa Swallow, a distant relative of mine.
Yeah.
Was such a strong supporter of the Earl.
He was always with us. We'd go together, Uncle Lee and Numa. We'd go to the peanut patch up there in Winfield to see Governor Long about different things we wanted done. And one time, for the Cotton Festival, Al was very interested in the Cotton Festival, and we wanted some money to help us sponsor the state. So Al and I reached an appointment with him at the old Governor's Mansion on North Boulevard. So we get that with a delegation of maybe 25 people about the, to see him about the cotton festival. So one of his aides come down and found out. He says, asked Albert and I said, we're here to talk to the governor about the Chico Park. There's people here, the delegation would like to see him, talk to him. He says, the aide says, the governor wants to talk to you and you and I. So I went down there. He was there in his pajamas. And talked, governor, we'd like to, the delegation would like to talk to you about getting an aid for the Cotton Festival. He says, Albert, and hello, he says, I guess there's just no money to afford. If I give you all some money, I'm going to have to give every festival in the state, and we just can't afford it. What you want us to tell those people down there, just tell them I lied. Another time, we went, Grandma and I and Uncle Lee went to meet him at, in a speaking engagement at Guysville, Louisiana. That's below, that's below Baton Rouge on the river. We got there, and Earl was getting ready to make a talk. But we met him in a cafe next to where we were going to talk. And so he drank a beer. He had a beer, and he had a big glass. And there were some ladies close by. Earl took out his false teeth in a glass, and he washed it well with the beer, put it back in, didn't drink the beer. The women were there, oh, Lord have mercy. But that's where Earl was. You talk about a common old rascal.
Yeah, he was an everyday man.
Everyday man. But he was, listen, he had a memory like a steel trap. Uh-huh. He'd never forget a face. And he, whenever he told you something, you could depend on him.
When with Governor Edwards, one thing I always admired about him, my limited experience in politics. If you went to him, be prepared for what you were going to ask, and he would tell you yes or no. Yeah. There was no maybe, I would see about it. It was either yes or no.
And then you could depend on it.
Yes.
That was his strong suit.
Yes.
The only reason he got in trouble, he was too good to his friends. His friends took advantage of him. They made him do things
yes.
that he shouldn't have done. My father always told me, don't worry about your enemies. You know where they are. But he said, watch out for your friends. They're going to make you do something that you don't want to do.
So, and they're the hardest ones to tell no to, your friends.
It was great. I'd like to go a little bit about my married life.
Oh, please, please.
In 1943, I went out to the Rendezvous nightclub, and through some common friends and relatives, they introduced me to Teresa, who was my present wife. I was struck. Unbelievable. So we started dancing and talking and talking. And it started. Next weekend, she came to the Evangeline Club. I was there to meet her. Because every weekend, I'd come back. So it got pretty thick. So she would write to me every day. Every day after I got married, I had a stack of her letters. Every day she'd write to me, I'd write to her every day. And sometimes we have a little spat for a couple of weeks.
Like every couple?
Like young couples too. This, this is still puppy love. She was just a senior in high school. And I was just maybe a sophomore at LSU and 16 years old. So, but we got closer and closer and closer and closer. As the time went on, and her mother would take her to the Evangeline Club to the club, I'd go meet her. But I couldn't go. She was too young for me to go get her and bring her out. They wouldn't allow her. On Sunday, she would come to the movie, and I'd meet her again on Sunday. And after the movie, I'd take off and go back to Baton Rouge. But like all things, I mean, this is a long time before we got married. So she went on, graduated in a salutatorian in Fedrine High School, and went I really got scared that I was going to lose her. She went to Lafayette at a business school. I knew that was going to have some competition there, you know, because you listen, not to brag, but she was a beautiful woman, a lot. I mean, a lot. That picture of her that I have next to my, it's a beautiful picture.
You knew she was going to attract a lot of other men's attention.
And I was afraid for that. I was afraid, you know. She would, you know, get out of habit with me. But she'd come back home every weekend, and me too. Till she got tired of it. About 3 or 4 months, I'm going back home.
So, you mean she quit school then and not yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I came back home. So my fears were pretty well relieved.
Uh-huh.
So it went on. And during the Christmas holidays in 1945, it really got serious then. She went to visit Alan Cormier, who was her nephew. Alan's mother was Therese's half-sister, because she was an adopted child, but she had a lot of natural brothers and sisters. Mrs. Cormier, Alan's mother, was her half-sister. And I went there, I stayed with them. She went and visited them for several days during the Christmas holiday. So I stayed in Opelousas during my time in the Christmas holiday. And it's getting kind of thick then. I was just about to, I was still in law school, but I was in my second year. So finally, in March of, the latter part of February, I said, it's time to get married. I said, I've been going with you for 3 years now. You know me. I know you. I want you to be my bride. She said, we have to go talk to Daddy. Lord have mercy.
You didn't look forward to that.
And this is her only child. And she was only 18 years old, and I was only 19 years old. I said, well, I'm going to go. So I went. Oh. Keep asking me to put it off. I said, Mr. Willis, I said, if there's any putting off to be done, as far as I'm concerned, it would have to be the reason. So she said, I want to get married now. So the old man said, if that's what you want, you're going to go ahead and do it. So we got married in Mamou on March 2nd, 1946. So Uncle Lee got her a job with the state, $85 a month in the welfare department. That's what her salary. And Mama would underwrite me with a stipend for me to go to school. Because my father died in 1944 before I finished, got my degree. My role model died. But it just made me that much more to proceed to run.
George, at that point, though, before your dad died, he knew that you were going to become an attorney.
Oh, yeah, he knew that. He knew that I was doing real well at LSU. And about to finish, he died in 44, and I finished in 45. So I was about a senior when he died in my undergraduate, but I had almost an A average. I was a good student. Work hard, but a good student. And they pushed. In those days, it was all accelerated because of the war. And I got a job with the president of the university, old President Hatcher. He was the dean of arts and sciences, and I started working with him. When he got to be president, he made me come work in the office to sort the mail and things like that. 50 cents an hour. And before that, I had gotten a job. I told him I wanted a little bit of extra money. I didn't want Mama to have to spend all that money. And I wanted, not that I particularly needed it, but I wanted that little extra money. So I went to the student aid office and said, I want a job. He says, okay, we'll give you a job. 35 cents an hour working in the dairy. I said, that's all you have? Yep, that's all I have. So I went to work in the dairy. 3 days. Get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, go at the milk and parlor, get those big, I guess it's 10-gallon cans of milk, and you have to roll them like you drive a car, up to load them up and down. And then you have to, when you got to the place where they pack the rice, the milk, you have to unload them and pour the milk into great big stainless steel vats to pasteurize the milk. Then after that, you have to put them in bottles.
That was the milk. Before they came out with the paper carton container.
I don't think they had, it wasn't the paper cartons at that time, I don't believe.
It was just the glass quart bottles, I think.
Yeah. So then, I worked for 3 days. On the third day, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and going to school at 8 o'clock, I just couldn't do it. I was not strong enough, number one, not that much in need. I went too much at loop. I said, I appreciate your help, but I just can't do that dairy work. It's just too demanding on me. He says, we figured you wouldn't be able to make it. But he says, what, is there anything else you can give me? He says, we put you in Dean Hatcher's office, in the junior division.
With a raise.
With the raise, 50 cents an hour. Oh, boy, then I was in good shape. So I'd make myself some extra money. Anyway, Therese and I rented a little apartment in North Baton Rouge. So in the morning, we'd get the bus. I let her down at the state capitol. Her office was in the annex. And the bus would contain to the head of 3rd Street, where the university bus would pick up there. And it was so tough, could cost you a nickel to get on the bus. And there was a ticket if you had to transfer. I'd always get my ticket to transfer to save that nickel. When I got to the head of 3rd Street, I'd go on into the university at law school. It went on like that for about a year. Therese was making $85 a month. And we were staying in that apartment in North Baton Rouge with an old man by the name of Cuvillon. He helped build the courthouse in 1910 and 1912 of the old man. He was a carpenter from Tokyoville.
Okay.
And his name was Cuvillon.
Okay, everyone, I want to thank you so much for listening to the Bennett Bakke Show and our special guests here in KVPI Radio. And we hope to see you again next time.